And overseas, a rise in populist politics has disrupted democracies, whether it be nationalist policies of politicians like Donald Trump or Marine Le Pen in France, or the soft socialism of Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn. In Australia, however, mainstream politics has remained relatively centered. This is most apparent in Bill Shorten's Labour Party. Despite being the longest leader of the party since Kim Beazley, Shorten is yet to leave a great impression upon the public, and the party seems to be having a bit of an identity crisis, possibly as a result. Now, I'm joined now by Professor Frank Bongiorno, a labor and political historian at the ANU and co-author of A Little History of the Australian Labor Party. How little was that history, Frank?
Oh, it was pretty little. it was about 150 pages or so, I think.
So it seems that there are a lot of incentives for Shorten to adopt populist politics himself and become the champagne socialist his opponents have called him. But why do you think he's remained so conservative and steadfastly conservative in his leadership?
Yeah, I think it's partly to do with the Australian environment. Australia's been a bit like Canada and New Zealand, in that you haven't really had the populist revolts of either the right or the left. And I think that's meant that the Labor Party here under Shorten's had much more space, I guess, to take a more relaxed approach to policy making. They haven't had to fear having particularly, their core, their base, if you like, stolen by populists on the left or right. And I think that's had a big impact on that kind of moderation. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because populism engenders a lot of the time. And I mean, we've seen populism in the form of like One Nation and so forth, but it hasn't really, I guess, impacted it to so much an extent. So where does Shorten as a leader fit into sort of Labour's history of leaders? Like how does he follow on from their tradition?
In Australia? Yeah, I think, he does represent that kind of moderate tradition in a lot of ways that goes back through, Beazley, who you mentioned, Kim Beazley, or Keating, Bob Hawke. So I think that, the attempt perhaps to paint him as being, drastically left-wing has been a bit overdrawn because I think Shorten himself really identifies with that tradition. He's a bit older than me. I think he's born 1967, which makes him a teenager in the 1980s. And I think the way in which Bob Hawke in particular has clearly been some kind of model for how he's crafted his own career has been really striking. No one ever does it the same way twice, of course, and Shorten's operating in a very different environment to Bob Hawke. But I think he identifies with that kind of fairly pragmatic sort of tradition with, in some ways, at least the trappings of an identification with an older blue-collar working class. I think there is an element of that with Shorten which comes out of his trade union background in the Australian Workers' Union, but it's still very much a moderate sort of policy. And the AWU, which he came out of, was famously, one of the most right-wing unions in Australia.
So you mentioned, obviously you can't really talk about Labour without talking about trade unions. And that's kind of one thing that they've been very steadfast and very clear about throughout, especially Shorten's leadership. And they have a lot of influence over the Labour Party. Is that something that needs reform? And if so, do you think Shorten's the kind of person to lead that reform?
I don't think he is, no. I think he comes from a trade union background. And so if you believe that the unions are exercising too much influence over the Labour Party, and I think there is an argument for that, unions now represent a relatively small proportion of the workforce in Australia. It's probably about 15% overall. Back in the 1980s, for example, about one in every two employees was a member of a union. And yet the influence of the Labor Party, the influence of the unions within the Labor Party remains very strong indeed, over pre-selections, over, who's a party official, all the things that actually matter. And certainly I can't see Shorten ever taking, that particular reform, sort of package, if you like, or process on, because his background, I think, would make it virtually impossible. It's very difficult to reform the Labor Party, actually. I mean, some people talk about it as being a kind of, union oligarchy, and they're very difficult to deal with.
So sort of a lot of vested interests that have been there so long, it's hard to dislodge them, or?
Yeah, very much so, I think. And in some ways representing a smaller proportion of the workforce, but nonetheless very powerful within the rules of the Labor Party.
And Shorten himself as a person, obviously we don't have the same sort of, leader power or leader, you know, cult status as say the president of the United States or something like that. But obviously the leader still exerts a lot of influence on public perception of the party. What's your opinion of Bill Shorten, first of all? Like what impression do you get of him?
I think he's very dogged and determined. I mean, I was impressed by the quality of his campaigning at the 2016 election. I thought they were going to be run over, frankly, and they weren't. You know, the Labor Party wasn't. They lost the election. In fact, it felt like they'd won at times. I mean, he was going around after the election as if he was the great victor. But they lost narrowly, and I think that did have quite a bit to do with you know, a pretty dogged, calm, determined performance. He's not a popular leader, and I think it's unlikely ever to be a popular leader. He's not, I think, a very charismatic figure. He can come across at times as wooden, although perhaps less so now as he settled into the job. I mean, he's been there many years now. He became leader in 2013. He's very protected, it needs to be kept in mind too, by rule changes in the Labor Party that were sort of Kevin Rudd's legacy back in 2013. It's very difficult to get rid of a Labor leader between elections now. There's a system of rank and file membership voting. You need 60% of the parliamentary Labor Party to actually call for his removal.
How unified is the Labor Party across the country? Like, where does it stand in terms of, like, unified goals? And you know, obviously not everyone's going to agree on what Labor is or should be, but how tight-knit are they together at this stage under Shorten?
Oh, I think, you know, it's very difficult to measure these things because, you know, of all those disincentives, I think, at the moment with an election only a year out and rules that, you know, make it virtually impossible to challenge a leader, you know, to test that. Look, I think there is a broad set of agreements, you know, within the Labor Party now that issues like inequality and intergenerational inequality in particular, you know, all those issues around things like housing affordability do need to be tackled. You know, that's very much, I think, you know, the environment we're living. It's post-global financial crisis. It's post-Thomas Piketty and all those arguments about inequality that have become much more salient, I think, in the wake of the global financial crisis. And so to that extent, I think there is a kind of core, you know, a kind of core consensus that it's no longer really enough to simply talk about economic growth as if that'll somehow magically, you know, bring about the kinds of outcomes that people want.
So people aren't buying it as much.
They're not. I don't think people are buying it now. And I think that, you know, Shorten's been accused by the government of being some kind of socialist.
I think we can agree that that's just... It's not true. He's not.
It's not true, but it's, I suppose, a measure of the fact that the rhetoric is perhaps, you know, it is more aggressive than a Labor, than Kevin Rudd, say, a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that's got less to do with Shorten than it has to do with the environment in which he's now operating, which has transformed. It's been transformed internationally in the way you suggested at the beginning by Brexit, by Trump, by, you know, all these revolts on left and right. I mean, one of the things that's happening in Europe, of course, is that even the populist parties of the right, although we tend to, I guess, read about their views on immigration, they're also, of course, stealing many of the older social policies of the traditional left. Now, that's not happening in Australia.
Why are we so, like, why aren't we seeing this? Like, why are we somehow immune to this? It doesn't seem reasonable.
Yeah, we're not entirely immune to it. I mean, as you mentioned, there's Pauline Hanson at One Nation. The GFC clearly didn't have as negative an impact. Mm. I mean, I was living in Britain when that happened, and I came back to Australia in 2011. It looked like a land of milk and honey, as far as I could see, in comparison with Britain, which was an incredibly depressed place by then. And, of course, parts of Europe much worse. I think that's had a lot to do with it. But I think, you know, a longer tradition of centrist policies, I mean, even something as basic as compulsory voting in Australia tends to mean that parties, they tend to cleave to the centre rather than looking for the fringes and trying to really motivate people to come out to vote. And so you don't get that in Australia.
And I suppose you did express a bit of distrust earlier in how much preferred leader polls actually matter. If I'm not sure how tomorrow, do you reckon Bill Shorten could lead Labor to win the polls?
He'd win one, I think, if an election was called tomorrow on the polling. I mean, the way you put it before actually is exactly right. In the Australian election study for years, so this is a study that's done after each election, puts it exactly as you put it before, that leaders stand for the party or are seen by the public, the voting public, to somehow symbolise or stand for the the party. And so if a leader's kind of, you know, all over the shop, people, you know, think the party is also all over the shop, you know, quite regardless of whether its policies actually are. And so, you know, leaders matter to that extent. But, yeah, you wouldn't normally, I think, use a preferred prime minister poll as a way of predicting an election. It is a poor predictor.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Frank. It's been a very enlightening look into the Labour Party a little bit, and especially under Bill Shorten. Thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Pleasure to speak, Sam.